it's still hard to really rest in pleasure. And part of that is attention span, like you're saying. Part of it is that ability to stay with the experience. But part of it is really like a larger conditioning to be like, that's not what's important. You know, that's not what matters. That's not what's valued. Like, I'm going to think my way out of this. I'm going to think my way to feeling good or having a good experience. And like how often I'm not really present for what's happening. Welcome to Cosmic Clowns, a podcast about exploring consciousness, surviving chaos, and finding the comedy in it all. I'm Sebanai Selassie, a writer and teacher, a living room dancer and shower singer, a body oil enthusiast, and a heated rivalry fangirl.
And I'm Jocelyn K. Gly, a writer and an energy worker, a lover of big desks and even bigger whiteboards, a serial maker of altars, and a dedicated reader of queer fiction, and thus also obviously an enthusiastic fan of Heated Rivalry as well, which is a lovely TV series to watch for Valentine's Day if you haven't already dived into this gay hockey show that the internet is totally obsessed with, including us. And speaking of Valentine's Day, which will be happening the day after this episode first airs, we have decided to explore the erotic on today's show. But surprise, we are not just talking about sex. We're using Audre Lorde's groundbreaking conception of the erotic as, quote, a resource within each of us that lies in a deeply female and spiritual plane, firmly rooted in the power of our unexpressed or unrecognized feeling. End quote. Her idea of the erotic includes the sexual, but prioritizes the sensual. The erotic empowers us to center pleasure and joy in our lives, also as modes of resistance and revolution. In this conversation, we will share about our own connections and challenges with the erotic, the role of beauty within the sensual, and what part the erotic might play in transforming our world right now. But first, let's check in. Sebanai, how are you feeling? How are you showing up today?
I feel much better after hearing you intro this episode. I'm excited to talk about this. I realize how much I needed this right now. I'm right at the tail end of my in-between time of these surgeries. So I have my next surgery next week. And as I was telling you before, we started recording. I've just been, frustrated and kind of reaching my breaking point with where I'm at physically. But also, I think it's starting to really hit me what I'm about to go through yet again. So I'm a little bit down, I would say, in terms of my energy today. I'm gonna try and lean into the whining. Maybe it'll make its way into our discussion of the erotic. But happy to be with you.
Happy to be with you too.
How are you doing with your sexy voice for the erotic episode?
Yeah. Well, let's hope it stays sexy and doesn't veer back into the kind of 14-year-old boy voice breaking as he goes through puberty vibe that I was in a couple days ago. I have a cold that I'm recovering from, so apologies, listeners, to however my voice may sound or whatever may happen during this episode.
Or you're welcome.
But I feel you. You're welcome, as long as I sound more like Kathleen Turner than, I don't know, whatever the alternative is. But I feel you on the in-betweenness. That is very much in a different way where I am right now. As you know, I am in the process of packing up my house to move. I'm selling my house. We have sort of a planned on closing date, but it's not 100% fixed. So I'm sort of packing as if and I have an intermediary place to stay, which I'm very grateful for. But I also don't know where I'm sort of permanently moving. So it feels very fluxy. It feels very in between. It feels very threshold, right? But sort of like threshold to what? Exactly, you know, like to where are we going exactly? You know, and like there's a lot of positive signs. So I'm feeling good. But yeah, I feel like, you know, and we both listen to the astrology podcast, and a lot of times they talk about with different planets and transits, they'll highlight certain keywords that are associated with them. And I feel like for this year, for last year, like in between feels like one of those keywords that we're all sitting with in different ways. It feels like there's so much flux and so much change. And so many difficult things that we're navigating, like, you know, as you are in a very physical sense right now.
Yeah. And, you know, then when I think about that in terms of the erotic, it's like even more do, at least let me speak for myself, I need to root into the body and the sensual and feeling and pleasure as a means of balancing all the uncertainty and difficulty and challenges and pain, physical and psychic. And yeah, and I'm appreciating, I re-listened to Audre Lorde. There's a version on YouTube that we can link to in the show notes, but there's a version of her reading this essay at a conference or some gathering. And yeah, it was so helpful to remember how profound this idea of the erotic as refuge, really. I don't know if she uses that word, but for me, that's what it feels like. It's like as this deep well, this deep source for appreciating life in this way that is hard when you're going through it or the world is going through it. And yeah. So I'm glad we're talking about this.
Yeah. I listened to that talk as well in preparation for this essay. And there was a metaphor that she uses that I wanted to share that might be an interesting place to start. But before we get there, I also wanted to ask for you, there are so many people navigating physical things, navigating illness, navigating challenges. And I'm curious, you're talking about the erotic and the sensual as refuge. And I'm curious how that shows up for you, like finding that refuge in the sensual when there is also, and this may not be the way that you would put it, but like pain in the sensual as well. How does that kind of play out for you? I'm curious.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a certain point, I think I've talked about this and I've written about it, but just I wanted to apologize for all the times when I was asked about how to work with pain on retreat or in classes in terms of meditation. And I had never really experienced chronic pain at that time. Of course, I'd experienced pain because we all have, and I'd gone through pain, various cancer treatments. But there's something about really tending to the body in pain that is about, for me, moving towards that comfort or ease. At one point in the essay, she talks about understanding whether it feels right to me. You know, that's like kind of the invitation. You know, does this feel right to me? And of course, physical pain doesn't feel right. Like it feels wrong initially, but there's this sort of patience with like really understanding then what's the response, right? Like this feels right to actually move my body, or, you know, there can be, especially in the type of meditation that I've been trained in, to keep stillness as this like almost like fetishizing stillness and silence as like the goal. But I find that movement is really helpful for my pain. So even if I'm in a formal meditation, to actually allow my body to sway and you know, allow mm-hmm. my hips to sway. And that is, yeah, that knowing if something feels right to me or not. And then you could just apply that to so much, because there's certainly a lot of things that feel wrong right now.
It's like a couple bits and pieces.
1,000,000,000.
A million. A colossal waste heap of
wrong feeling.
Yeah, of wrong feeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so that, like, that deeper wisdom of the body, right?
Yeah, there is this deeper wisdom of, like, the body knows how to feel free, right? Mm. And so to allow right. that, and a not lot this. Of the time, it for me involves like laying down. Like, I'm a big proponent of laying down meditation, because the body can finally relax and release and. Yeah, so that encouragement, you know, it feels right to me, this feels right to me, or that feels right to me, is an exploration. Like, it's not like an end thing, like, okay, this feels right and that's it. But it's this continual, like, kind of knowing without, like, reactivity of, like, okay, now I got to move out of this way. Now I got to move, that doesn't feel right. Like, it has to sort of come from
balance
and, like, kind of just like a larger awareness that has the space to, like, really be with something. And now, like, mm-hmm. physical or emotional, like, instead of immediately, like, pushing it away.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What's been sparked from this essay for you?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking it might be interesting to ground folks, to share a little bit about what we kind of perceive as definitions or ideas that surround the erotic, and maybe some that come up in the specific Audre Lorde talk that we were referring to for people who aren't familiar with that. But I was also just, when I was listening to you, I was thinking about this moment where I was able to kind of drop into my body and drop into presence and drop into sort of sensualness in a way that felt like so much deeper than anything I'd experienced in a really long time. And for folks who have been listening to this show, you may know that I do a lot of work with crystals. And so I had been sitting in meditation. I was working with this specific crystal, which is a black garnet, which is, many of the crystals have associations with different chakras. And this one is association with Earth Star, which is like the chakra beneath the root chakra, you know, so super, super grounded. And I just had this experience of almost like getting this kind of cosmic tune-up. And I kind of came out of that meditation. It was so interesting. I just felt more, you know, we're talking about the erotic as being able to ground you, you know, and I felt so grounded and so rooted. And it was like, I was walking on the ground and it just like, I felt like every footstep in this really palpable way. And I went into my kitchen to make dinner and I was, you know, chopping the garlic and I was chopping, and I just felt like I was with the garlic and like I was so excited to put, I was like, I can't wait to put this food that I'm making in my body. You know, I just felt like very erotic, like very sensual. That state persisted for, I don't know, maybe 24, 36 hours, something like that. Like, I was just so grounded, so present. And it was really beautiful that, like, what a how much joy that brought me to enter into that space, and also how much gratitude, because I was not all, you know, in my head and in my whatever, my anxieties and my fears and my stuff, like, you know, that comes up when you get just your energy gets way too drifted up into that space. But I just could see all of my blessings because I was so there, and that sensuousness kind of opened me more to them, you know? So, and of course, then it's sad when it sort of, oh, back to where I was before, but so amazing to have that experience and be like, oh, that's, you know, that's available. And when I was re-listening to that Audre Lorde talk, you know, she was talking about the erotic as a source of information and power, a source that, you know, we'll say we're conditioned not to maybe reference so much or to dip into so much. And also really talking about the power that comes from non-rational knowledge, right? Mm. From that erotic, from that sensual information. And she used this metaphor that I love so much, where she was talking about, I guess it was during World War II, getting like margarine. You would get your margarine, it would be white, and it would come with this little yellow pellet in it, like alongside of the package for like coloring. And you would put the pellet in there, and then you would like, you know, kind of knead it like into the margarine until this, you know, this yellow coloring like sort of suffused all of it. And she was saying, that's what I, you know, that's kind of what I feel like the erotic can kind of be suffused into everything and add this like brightness and this color and kind of this energy into everything when we kind of invite it into the fullness of our body, the fullness of how we show up, all of these things. And I thought that metaphor was really powerful, thinking about how we can suffuse the erotic, right? Because it's so in our culture limited to kind of this focus on sex. But how can we suffuse that sensuousness and that awareness? Like I was saying in my example, you know, like infusing cooking with the erotic, you know, and there was just like, oh, this appreciation of all of the ingredients and this idea that I was going to nourish my body with that food and how that can really be, I think, as you were saying earlier, a real source of strength and empowerment.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that and grounding us in that, because I realize, you know, just coming here today with, as I said, a lot of frustration and being in the midst of this kind of pain portal that I've been in for a while, I realize how hard it's been actually to access that. Like as you were describing it, you know, not that I haven't had moments of sensual pleasure, I've had many in the past year, but this kind of sustained connection to the body, like how much I haven't wanted to be in my body because of what's been happening and how much my body's been a problem. And I know that's true for many people in different ways, not necessarily because of debilitation, but for whatever relationships we have with our bodies that are conflicted.
Yeah.
And the body is our opening to the erotic. We can't have a relationship to the erotic without our senses. That emphasis on the sensual and not only the sexual, but also the sexual has been, you know, for me, when I first read this essay, I think I first read it in college, but then later on came to it again, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, it was kind of making a resurgence, I think mostly due to the work of Adrienne Marie Brown, kind of bringing it forward in her book, especially Pleasure Activism, but she was writing about it before that, that this attention to all of our senses as this source of power, as you're saying, of, you know, so the beauty around me, I know we both are like fans of the aesthetic and beautifying spaces and places and bodies and how music or food or scent or touch,
laughter. Let us not forget.
Really, you know, just all of that dance, the full appreciation of our bodies as these feeling beings, and how much that's just really kind of diminished and also discouraged. I think about it as a straight woman, straight-ish, how often I experience myself as the object of the male gaze. Like, I think until my 30s, I'd never really been aware of how I didn't even know how to engage in my own pleasure beyond self-pleasure and masturbation. Like, there was this way in which I was objectifying myself, like, in relationship with someone else, you know, and how that's even still hard for me. Like, it's still this, it's still hard to really rest in pleasure. And part of that is attention span, like you're saying, like, you know, you were in this heightened state because of this experience, spiritual experience you had, but we don't necessarily sustain that, right? Outside of our meditations or specific acts. But like, part of it is that ability to stay with the experience. But part of it is really like a larger conditioning to be like, that's not what's important. You know, that's not what matters. That's not what's valued. Like, I'm going to think my way out of this. I'm going to think my way to feeling good or having a good experience. And like, how often I'm not really present for what's happening. Because I've like spent so much time trying to arrange like a dinner or a gathering or a experience. And then like, am I actually taking it in, you know, through all my senses?
Yeah, absolutely. And that like predominance, as you say, of like the mind and of the rationality and of the like, what's the outcome going to be? And, you know, the planning, the sort of forward looking and the backward looking, all of which, you know, just takes us out of like that actual ability to be present in the moment and to actually inhabit all of our senses. Like, and the challenges on top of the conditioning of just like the, you know, batshit craziness of like everything that is happening right now. And, you know, you read the news and it's like, like just like so much going on, which, you know, and you look at that stuff and I don't know about you, but you know, it has some impact on the body, right? Whether it's like a freeze or a disassociation or a, you know, some impact, right, on our ability to be in our bodies. And a lot of times just like the energy rising up, right? Like just getting into that fear, getting into that anxiety or, you know, whatever it is, your favorite emotional flavor in reaction to reading the news, you know? Fear and anxiety are like two of my faves. I don't know about you. But yeah, it's like, we just have so many, and that just like gazing at the screens, gazing at the cell phones, gazing at social media, gazing at the news, it pulls us so out of our bodies and out of the erotic. And to one of the points that Audre Lorde talks about is like out of our life force, right? Like the erotic as this like centering of our life force. I think about, you know, Eros is in kind of, if you talk about like the chakra system, it's sort of centered around the sacral chakra, the second chakra. So like the lower abdomen where, you know, all of our like, you know, sexual organs are like, and our connection to sexuality, but also like that connection to all of creation, to all of generativity. Like I think of that chakra as kind of this like hearth of creativity, right? Like that kind of flame coming up from there that we light, and or even not that we light, but that we tend, you know, like that fire of Vesta or something, you know. And if we're not in the body, if we're cut off from that, we're really cut off from that life force. And as I was thinking about that, as I was thinking about this episode, I was also thinking about June Jordan and her saying, you know, love is life force. And so that connection from like, you know, the erotic Eros to love, but like love as life force. So much of what is everything that is happening, like this kind of, you know, this regime that we're living under here in the US right now is like anti-life, anti-love, right? And therefore also like, you know, it's like anti-life force, anti-eros, in my opinion. I don't know. How does that land for you?
Yeah, totally. It's so beautifully put. And yeah, and you know, it's as you're speaking again, I'm recognizing like, and you know, maybe there are folks that this resonates for, of just when the body is injured or ill, and my current injuries happen to be in the second chakra, right? There is this dimming and squelching of that energy. And yet we live in a system that I can't just completely stop, right? I mean, I've taken a lot of, I've slowed down this past year, but I have not been able to completely stop except for short periods of time, just because, you know, we live in capitalism that is extractive and exploitative, and I do not have the resources to not stop or to stop. And how, yeah, that sort of like engine that you have to keep feeding in order to power a system that is not fully regenerative, right? That's sort of having to constantly, yeah. And I think for many of us in this culture, like we don't have a connection to systems and structures, not to mention the actual earth and the energy that, you know, being connected to the earth provides. I always think about how I live on the fifth floor. And as you know, I have a lot of plants. And one of the reasons why I like to have a lot of plants is because I feel so ungrounded in the air. I used to have this ridiculous argument with my ex-husband about like where we would want to live if we didn't live here. And he would get so mad because he did not like the idea of a brownstone because they're dark, which is whatever. We're not going to have a brownstone anyways because we didn't have the money for it. But like, so we're having these hypothetical, ridiculous arguments.
We're
about
not
where
buying a multi-million dollar
fancy home do we not have? But he was like, no, the answer is an apartment that has like balconies and you can see and you have a lot of plants. And I was like, no, I want to live on the ground. Like if I had a brownstone, I would put my bedroom in the ground floor.
Yeah.
Because I want to sleep on the earth.
Yeah.
That idea of just being more grounded, literally, is such a, I mean, I'm never leaving my apartment because it's a two-bedroom, two-bathroom, rent-stabilized place that I have to die here.
But it's a good apartment.
It's a good apartment. I'm not complaining about my apartment. Hello, universe. I'm not complaining about my apartment. But there,
and you know, also,
I was at this journey one time, this ceremony, and there was a woman who was kind of feeling ungrounded, and she took off her shoes or she took off her socks. I think her shoes were already off, and she just like stuck her feet in a plant that was in the space to ground herself. And I was like, that is awesome. I love that.
Maybe I just need to get you some even bigger potted plants so you could do like a little walking meditation, like around. We'll just get you like a 10-foot diameter.
I'm never repotting these plants.
You got some epic ones there.
Oh my God, that palm in there is like trying to take over the living room. It's like, it so wants another pot. It was so tiny. My mom and I found it like 20 years ago on the street in DC. And it was like this spindly little thing dying on the corner. Yeah. And now it's like a freaking tree in my living room. So.
Yeah, I mean, that thing's at least like 6 feet tall, 5 feet wide.
Oh, something. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, I mean, because spinning it's all bent, around, it's taller than 6 feet for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's erotic.
I feel it. It's an erotic plant.
Yeah. I love how Audre Lorde in the essay talks about like all these moments of the erotic that seem so kind of mundane. Like she mentions painting a fence or like touching her lover's back or the sort of earthiness of life, you know, is dismissed as unimportant. And I think about this a lot in terms of beauty. I've been thinking about my love of beauty and the labor that goes into beautifying. And in big and small ways, you know, it might be that I want a, you know, my home to feel luscious and sensual and interesting in terms of color and texture and scent and feeling and but it's also in a kind of tiny way. Like I think I told you, I never realized that I could change the font in Notion to monotype. And then I was like, oh my God, I love the way this looks. And so Notion is a project management system that I use for all my like writing and stuff. And so I went in and like changed all the pages to monotype. And it made me so happy. I was And you know, that's a kind of labor that gets dismissed as not productive, right? Oh, we have the designers that, you know, make things, but the sort of the making of the space and how often that is associated with the home and with women and with the feminine. And it's this, I think you called it erotic labor at one point when we were talking about it. And it is a, you know, a labor of beauty and an erotic labor that is deeply sensual and so healing, right? Like it's this quiet creative power.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, beauty is such a, I'm a little uncomfortable right now because I'm in such disarray in my house because I'm packing and I'm so like, you know, I have so many altars in my house and, you know, my art and my quilts and my whatever, you know, just as with you, like very interested in color and arrangement and just creating a beautiful space because it brings me so much joy and so much peace. And it's, you know, it's very common that people come into my home and they're just like, oh, it's just like, I'm sure you experience this too. They're just like, oh, it just like feels good in here. And so it's like, we all know it and we have this extremely intuitive like erotic reaction to it, but as you say, we're not so acculturated to like consciously appreciating it or consciously like attributing a lot of value to that creation of beauty, to that erotic labor. And something else you were saying was making me think, I've been, although the disarray bothers me, I have been enjoying packing so much, and I wasn't really thinking about it as sort of, you know, as sensuous, erotic activity. And for me, it's such a pleasure because so much of the work that I do is intellectual and creative, but in, you know, in like a very mind focused sort of way. You know, I'm writing, like I'm not like dancing, you know? And so to do, you know, to spend day after day doing like physical things and just being in that kind of very 3D physical world brings me so much joy and is so like calming and peaceful for my mind, in the same way that, you know, I have a bunch of wood I need to stack outside. And that too is such a, you know, a kind of pleasurable, you know, it is a very kind of rote activity, but so pleasurable. And I remember when I was interviewing Adrienne Marie Brown years ago, when Pleasure Activism came out for my other podcast, Hurry Slowly, talking about pleasure and just really noticing, I remember talking with her about it, but then really reflecting on it after the conversation, how much, for me, how all of my moments of real joy and pleasure revolve around being very present in a sensuous kind of way, whether it's in nature or experiencing a meal with someone or, you know, making love or any number of these things, but where you really are feeling like truly connected to your body. That's like almost every instance of like real joy and pleasure lands there for me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I wonder, as you were saying that, I was like, well, that's like all pleasure must come from that. But I know that there are people who get pleasure from things that we don't consider sensual. But I think I told you recently I was teaching a retreat and I met this guy on the retreat, one of the retreatants, who was a math prodigy when he was young. And he talked to me. We were having a larger conversation about AI and things at the end of the retreat. But he basically said to me, math is taught wrong because it's actually a sensual experience. And I was like, okay, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Didn't I tell you this? I was like,
I'm intrigued. No, you didn't tell me this one.
Yeah. I was like, what does that mean? So I have to follow up with him. Yeah, I know. Really. I was like, I want to know more. But yeah.
Wait, is this going to be a cliffhanger? Are you going to tell us?
I don't know. I haven't explored it. I need to know.
Oh my God.
I'm not. But I'm saying that I know that there are times when I get such pleasure out of writing, which is such a mental project and experience. But
yes,
it's often when the things I'm writing are eliciting kind of a joy of this connection of experience, of ideas and moments and humor and poignancy. And I have a good friend from college, Madeline Kent, who teaches a modality that she's created. She's also a Feldenkrais practitioner called sense writing, and invites people into a real kind of connection with the body and with the senses in their writing. And so I've taken a number of workshops with her over the years, and it really resonates for me. And I'm not always employing sense writing in my writing, but I think that that's always... that's sort of seeped into me over whatever, however the decade that Madeline's been teaching that. But yeah, I'm wondering if all pleasure is in fact sensual pleasure. And just one more thing to add that, you know, in the Buddhist kind of structure, the mind is the sixth sense. And so what is the experience of the mind? And this is not consciousness. This is the mind sense. Consciousness is another thing. But, you know, can we have a relationship to that that actually is embodied, right?
That's so interesting. Yeah. And I'm so glad you made that point because, of course, as soon as I finished what I was saying, I thought, well, but what about ideas? Like my greatest pleasure, talking about ideas, you know, or having ideas or having that insight, right? And yeah, and to your point with writing too, like when I'm having the most fun or I'm getting the most enjoyment from it, you know, I'll make myself laugh or I'll make myself cry or, you know, I'll like literally move myself in some way and be like, oh, okay, this, I know this is good, right? Like I myself am moved by this. And exactly as you say, it's this kind of, I am able to so inhabit it and also it create something that feels sensuous in and of itself, right? And wow, I am a great believer in... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just saying, I am a great believer in the power of words to move energy. Like words, as we both would agree, right? Everything is vibration. Words are vibration. Every way in which we show up is vibration in a sense. And so it's all sensuous or able to be felt in that way. And I really believe that words can, you know, have a very deep physical, energetic impact on us, which of course is a very like erotic, very sensuous thing. Well, you were having an insight or something.
Yeah. Well, when you started talking about movement, I was just thinking about, that article that we both read from Harper's about consciousness, and he was talking about time and space as being sort of these constructs we have, but they miss movement. and flow, and how much, you know, and a lot of activists use movement as the word to describe their work, and how that's just a natural, it's the nature of reality is change fundamentally, right? But really flow and movement. And so how much erotic experience and pleasure is about tapping into movement, whatever sense door it's coming through, right? And
yeah, that, absolutely.
And that is, it's also in the pleasure of witnessing, like that different colors and different shapes have energy to them, right? So even if it's a static painting, it is movement because of those dynamic pairings. And when we were talking about sort of spaces of beauty before, I was just, what flashed in my mind is like the beige people, you know, this kind of phenomena of like, it's a lot of millennials,
are you talking about beige moms?
Are they moms mostly now? I witnessed it like at the beginning of the pandemic or right before I started noticing like a lot of young people, especially women, were just like all beige, like they were all neutral. And then their spaces are that way too. Like their homes are like all beige, and how unerotic that is, like how little movement there is, right?
Yeah, kind of monotone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my friend was recently referring to beige moms, or she was talking about her daughter was referring to beige moms, but like it was almost like in an aspirational way. And I was like, what's a beige mom? And I was like, is that someone who wears like a lot of like Eileen Fisher, you know? And she was like, I think so. And, you know, we were like, we're old. But yeah, that's an interesting one. Even like, going beyond that, just thinking about like cars today, right? Like everyone has a black or a gray or a white. Like we've really, you go to a coffee shop, there's this kind of standard, or an Airbnb, right? There's this kind of standard sort of neutered, like cool woods and whites. And like, it's also a very beige, like kind of vibe. And it's interesting like that. I wanted to say denuding of color, but like nuding of color or something that, you know, yeah, just pulling out all of that saturation and the eroticness of that, of that saturation and that variation and that individuality and all of that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot we could say about race and culture here, but I don't want to go down that road. But yes, there is that sort of, blandness of like no spice in the no spice in the food kind of feeling, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely a beige feeling.
Poor beige. We're not dismissing beige. We're just saying not only beige.
Not only beige.
I'm looking at a Hilma Omph Clint poster, and there's like some beige tones in it. So it's like in relationship to other things. I remember when I was in Hawaii 25 years ago or something, visiting Peter Bird, who you met over Christmas, and we went to the beach and did mushrooms. And so this might have factored into it, but I was just so overwhelmed by the perfection of nature's color palette, you know, just like this.
In Hawaii specifically?
Well, it hit me in Hawaii because I was on mushrooms
Just happened there. Yeah. Right. Which is amazing.
But there was a lot of beige, which is why it came to me in that moment because of the sand. But it was, you know, backgrounded by this dark lava rock and these red flowers and these you know, sage greens, and it was so beautiful, and yeah, the sensualness of color, that energy is so powerful.
Yeah, well, and one of the powers I think also of plants and like psychedelics, right, is that they can bring us into that deep, not always, but they can bring us into that deep communion with the erotic, where we're able to feel like that level of beauty and nature's design and this, you know, the saturation of color in this way that when we're in our sort of more normal state is really difficult to access. I'm curious, we are doing this episode on the day before Valentine's Day, and just thinking a little bit about that, a little bit about love, a little bit about the fact that our culture has decided to create one day for love. just the one. Just only celebrated on the one day, which is obviously a little sad and a little problematic. And I was thinking about something that one of my teachers said to me, which is that true power is the free flow of love. Being able to be tuned into the erotic in that way that you're constantly in dialogue with it. And I was thinking again of that margarine metaphor from Audre Lorde, and this idea that, like, if you could, the same way that you squeeze that little yellow pellet out, like if you could squeeze that, have that love permeate like every cell of your body, like how would you not be stronger, you know?
I mean,
the strength that comes from that. But that's so disconnected from the way that we're conditioned, you know, hence love gets one day. Love's not strong. We'll just get one little day over here.
And, you know, honestly, very hard to sustain without a lot of support. Inner support and interpersonal support and structural support and, you know, and...
Well, it's that free flow, right? Because it's got to be flowing back to you too, right?
Right. And it's often so depleted in so many of us. And so many people who are naturally so loving, they're just tapped out. Understandably so. And I mean, I would put myself in that category of just like, I have my capacities are quite limited right now. And so I have to be really careful about that. So, and then, you know, the sort of focus on a particular kind of love, it's like one day for love, but only romantic love. You know, I mean, that's a whole other episode or conversation, but
that's the end all be all.
Yeah. And that, I love how Audre Lorde makes the distinction between like the pornographic and the erotic and how this hyper fixation on the sexual, which I will couple with the romantic because it's so tied up, is so depleting, you know, because it really doesn't allow us to have that exchange that you're describing of love, except with those partners, if we have them.
Yeah, well, and also, like, will my expression of love be perceived as romantic? Or somehow like a come on, or you know what I mean? Because people are always in that lens, you know, it also can be like kind of a limitation in terms of expressing love because it feels like someone might receive it in sort of the wrong way because they're only used to like that channel or something like that as well, you
know? Yeah. I saw this like thing, what do you call that? YouTube short, like a little clip. So basically like something from social media that ended up on YouTube. That's what I think those are. And it was like those gags or those like bits that people do, like me acting crazy to see how my partner will react to my crazy energy. And like, there'll be like a bunch of those. So it was men trying to grab the hands of other men. So they're like brothers or friends and then tape and I think one brother or friend continued holding the hand. All of them were like, and it was so wild. And, you know, I come from cultures, both Ethiopian and Eritrean cultures, men hold hands. So you'll like, mm-hmm. you know, see two soldiers with their like pinkies linked walking down the road with machine guns on their other mm-hmm. arms, you know, and there's so I was used to a little bit more kind of
yeah.
connection between men, but that feeling that you can't even, and I can be guilty of this. I mean, I'm definitely very huggy with my friends, but there are only a few friends that I'm actually physical with, right? That
yeah.
there's sort mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. that same physicality that we have maybe with our closest family members, and usually, you know, it's between yeah. parents and children when the children are younger, and lovers, you know, and how yeah. sad that is.
Absolutely. And, you know, as someone who has been single for years at a stretch or has, you know, and has friends who are in similar situations, paucity of touch that you can mm-hmm. experience, because that is the way that we exist in this culture, is depleting as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I share your, you know, what you said about like, I am only able to be really affectionate with a smaller, you know, physically affectionate with a smaller.
I'm
going to
hug up on you
people.
Next time, Jocelyn.
We're just going to hold hands and rewatch Heated Rivalry.
Oh my God.
It's going to be so good.
Friggin' goddess for Heated Rivalry. That show has really gotten me through this period.
It seems to be getting the internet through something right now, through the beginning of 2026.
Talk about like a good use of the erotic.
Very erotic, people. Apparently we can't stop talking about it on this show. But it was funny. I listened to an edition of Hard Fork podcast recently, which is a technology podcast on the New York Times. And one of the hosts is a queer man. And he was just talking about Heated Rivalry at like the beginning of the episode and how much he loved it. Like he and his boyfriend had just watched it. And I was like, it's everywhere.
It is everywhere. We can't escape it. Well, you know, it's part of that like paucity of touch. It's, I've only lived alone a couple of times in my life. And one was in my mid-30s and I had a dog then. And then the other time is now, the past 3 years. And how much better it is after, you know, 2.5 years living without another mammal in the house. I have other beings in the house, mm-hmm. but and now to have like this very affectionate, loving dog who is, mm-hmm. you know, surprisingly not in my lap at the moment, but usually wants to be in my lap all the time it's so helpful, you know, just to have mm-hmm. that sensual, mm-hmm. erotic relationship with a dog.
Yeah, so glad Cha-Cha's in your life. And he's quite a lover. Like I remember when I was petting him, he would like, if I would stop, then he would take his little paw, wrap it around my hand and like put it back on top of him. Like he's expressing his needs very well.
He has no problem holding hands.
Yeah, he's very chill as a man with holding hands. Well, I feel like should we wrap it up there, but maybe end with, is there anything that's bringing you a little lightness in these in-between times right now?
I mean, I have been having a couple of really long conversations, like 2.5 hour more long catch up with friends who are far away. And that mm-hmm. just feels like such a sweet luxury. You know, especially for friends who I don't get to see in person a lot, like
yeah.
have that extra time. I had a really long catch up with my girlfriend, Naomi, who lives in LA, and she got to give me sort of a play-by-play of her recent trip to Europe with her family over the holidays, and just to hear all the, and she was with mutual friends at one point, and so it was like, just so, yeah, it feels like something I need to give myself more often. There are a couple of friends I know that when we're going to catch up, I really block out time because I know we might have, you know, yeah. a lot to share. So that's been really sweet. How about you?
Yeah, I love that. Just allowing yourself to really sink in the way that you would were you sharing the same physical space.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, for me, just lately, I have been watching old Kristen Wiig performances on SNL. Kristen Wiig is like one of my favorite comedic actresses. We didn't do it this year, but we talked, hopefully 2026, me and some friends up here talked about doing a Halloween party where we all just dressed up as Kristen Wiig characters from SNL.
Oh my God. Which would you
so
be?
So amazing. I would be Triangle Sally, slightly lesser known Kristen Wiig character who 100% looks like someone from Woodstock. Like, she wears a lot of like purple jumpsuits and like headbands and just plays like the triangle, the musical instrument, and does like a lot of high kicks. I'll put something in the show notes links for people.
Like, I like that that kind of 40s character she plays that's like, don't make me sing. Do you know that one? She's incredible.
Thank God.
So, well, thank you for this, friend, this Valentine's gift to each other. And thank you all for listening. It's an honor to have you listen to our show and share time with us. And we'd love to know that you're there. So if you have a chance, please like and rate this on whatever podcast platform you're on, or send us a message through one of our channels and let us know that you're here. We love to hear from you. You can continue to hear from us every other week here. And also, each of us has a newsletter on Substack. Jocelyn's newsletter, Radiate, is an amazing exploration of creativity and consciousness. And I always say this, but it's so true. They're always just such insights and inspiration there, and I'm really like love receiving that now through Substack, where I can also write funny little notes on your page. And then I write a newsletter called Remind Me to Love that follows the moon phases, and you can sign up for both of those with the links below in your podcast app. All right, friends, hope you it's funny, I started so sad and now I'm just like silly, which is good. Sad and silly, that's gonna
right,
be
we did it we did
that's
it.
Gonna be my epitaph, sad and silly. Please find ways to find the erotic, feel the erotic for yourselves, and find some comedy and consciousness. And we will see you next time and leave you with this moment of clown.
Yeah, I'm a little like, am I going to be funny or fun today at all?
I mean, it can also be funny to just go into the frustration and the sadness and the darkness, you know?
So fun. Oh my God, so fun.
2026 is looking so fun.
So
oh
sad.
My God.
So fun.
Yeah, this is the problem. We're just not like, we need to figure out how to expand our definition of fun to encompass annihilation and grief and sadness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all.
Right? Right? And then that's all.
That's all.
That's all. There's no wrong emotions.